Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And June is Brain and Alzheimer's Awareness Month. And we're going to talk about that right now. Neurologist and Senior Medical Director of the Advocate Memory Center at Lutheran General Hospital in Park Ridge, Dr. Darren Gittleman is with us. How are you, Doctor?
Fine. Thank you for having me this morning.
Sure. Absolutely. We were talking quite a bit off the air, a lot of questions about Alzheimer's. And I don't even know where to begin. My grandfather, we thought, had Alzheimer's disease many, many years ago, but it turns out it wasn't. They thought it was dementia. They weren't sure. What's the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's, and is there a difference?
You know, that's a question that comes up just all the time in clinic, nearly every patient. So dementia is a description of a person's clinical state, and it means that a person is having difficulty with their cognitive abilities, thinking, memory, language, for example, and that it's interfering with their daily life.
Mm-hmm.
Alzheimer's disease is a specific cause of dementia. It happens to be the most common cause as we get older, but it's just one of many possible causes of dementia.
And causes, a lot of people have heard aluminum is a bad thing. Switch from aluminum pots and pans, get stainless steel. Don't use aluminum in your deodorant. This can all lead to Alzheimer's. Any truth in that?
No, not at all. Hasn't panned out in the research.
Is this true? You can only be diagnosed with Alzheimer's once you have passed away, that you can't tell if a living person has Alzheimer's. Is that true or not true?
So you can get pretty close when they're living, and there are increasingly good methods for diagnosis, measurement of biomarkers in the spinal fluid or even types of imaging. But the definitive diagnosis, yes, is postmortem.
It is. Yeah.
How common is Alzheimer's?
Very common. In people over the age of 65, about 10% will have Alzheimer's or dementia, and by the time you hit your 80s, over 50%.
Ugh. Good God.
That's so frightening. Are those numbers going up, or is the diagnosis going up? Where do we stand in terms of how often this is happening?
Well, it turns out that actually people nowadays are actually a little bit less risk for Alzheimer's than their parents were because of improved education, possibly, because of maybe more focus on exercise and, and so on. But there are more of us now. So the diagnosis, the recognition of the diagnosis has improved. So it seems like there are just more and more people developing it, even though the risk is a little bit less.
Does this help or does this not make a difference? I've heard people say that keeping the mind active, doing things like crossword puzzles, word search puzzles, that sort of thing, is better in terms of prevention. Does that help at all?
So I think it's not just puzzles. So people say, you know, which computer game should I play?
Yeah.
And so on. It's really just keeping your mind active. And there are just, you know, the sky's the limit. It's up to your imagination. So it could be everything from knitting and gardening and doing things in the wood shop to visiting a museum, going to a lecture, going to a movie or play, reading, and then discussing what you've read in a book group and so on.
Yeah.
It doesn't just have to be puzzles if you don't like puzzles.
Okay.
You just throw, I'm a little bit of a hypochondriac. I'll get that out in the open right now. Full disclosure. We're a family of ADHDers, and you say, you know, keeping your mind busy. Sometimes ADHD, your mind is way too busy, and you have a tough time shutting down. Is there any link or correlation to that and Alzheimer's?
There has not been, no. Just keep yourself focused and do what you enjoy.
But sadly, somebody can keep themselves incredibly focused and their mind active and still they're hit with dementia and or Alzheimer's, huh?
Right. So we can do everything right. We can exercise, eat properly, get our sleep. And yet still some of us will develop Alzheimer's, just like people can do all the right things and have heart disease, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a particular age in which it's diagnosed? Because I've heard of early onset Alzheimer's. And it's Alzheimer's as opposed to Alzheimer's. I don't even know how to say it.
Either way is fine.
All right. Because I hear you saying Alzheimer's. But I've heard about early onset. You said 65 and over, a lot of people, percentage-wise, was it 50% that
about
get it?
10% over the age of 65 for everyone concerned, and 50% as you get into the 80s. A small number of people will develop the disease even younger, in their 40s or 50s. An even smaller number of those have a direct genetic connection, but that's quite rare. But many of the patients I see who are young, and that means in their 50s or so, we don't know why they get it at such a young age. The research is still ongoing.
So you can be screened. There's a couple of different processes by which you can be screened for it at this point, right?
Yes.
Yeah. A friend of mine, both of his parents had it at some point. He lost both of his parents to it, and he had the option, both he and his sister had the option to be screened, and he said, I'd rather not know. Where do most people stand on that? Do they want to know or do they not want to know?
And what can be done? That's a great point, Bill.
It is. People really take both approaches. Some people just don't want to know, feeling that there isn't anything they can do right now.
Yeah.
Other people want to know, and there are a variety of reasons to get an early diagnosis. In some patients, if they're having symptoms, maybe it's for some other reason. They have a thyroid problem or a vitamin deficiency, and that could be easily treated. Getting an early diagnosis may be more accurate than when people are in the later stages of the disease. There are some medicines now that can't take away the disease but help some of the symptoms, and taking those early may be a little more beneficial. Some people find it empowering, right? So even though you have a diagnosis, you can set your affairs in order. You can make sure people are taken care of. And it can help your family who are wondering, you know, why is this person having all these symptoms? Why are they behaving differently?
But your odds do increase if both of your parents have gone through it. You're heading in that direction more times than not, right?
Well, the odds increase somewhat, but
not dramatically.
Not dramatically.
Okay,
no,
good.
No,
good.
No, because most people don't have the direct genetic form of the disease.
Okay.
All right. So symptoms and signs. I know a lot of times there's some anger involved because you get frustrated when you can't remember things. But what about somebody who just forgets where they put their keys all the time or their wallet? That's not necessarily a sign of things. What are some of the symptoms we should be looking for?
So the Alzheimer's Association puts out a list of sort of 10 early signs, and the sort of focus of that list is many of the things: changes in memory, changes in planning or problem solving, changes in orientation and things like that. If they happen occasionally, once in a while, not really a problem, just part of aging. But if it's happening consistently, and particularly if it starts to interfere with daily life, that's when, you know, someone should get tested.
Am I understanding this right? Your brain will accumulate plaque, much like a tooth gets plaque. You get that on your brain to some extent, right?
Different type of plaque on the teeth and bacteria, plaque in the brain from this protein called amyloid.
Yeah.
And we now know, for research over the last 10 or 15 years, that plaque actually starts accumulating probably 20 years in advance of the clinical diagnosis. So many, many decades in advance. So that's why current studies are trying to enroll people even earlier, even sometimes before their obvious symptoms.
Yeah.
All right. So if you have plaque in your blood vessels or your heart, you know, you should have exercised and you should have eaten well. Is that the same thing that will help prevent Alzheimer's? Or no, there's no correlation there?
Well, there are studies that suggest that and newer studies that are looking into that risk as well. So we use plaque, I think, a lot of different ways. So plaque on the teeth, plaque in the blood vessels, plaque in the brain, but they're all different types of plaques. But I think certainly for the blood vessels and the brain, exercise may be of benefit when done early on and done regularly, as does cognitively engaging activities, social activities, getting sleep. None of us get enough sleep nowadays, and eating healthy.
So it's important to, like, shut down your brain and let it reboot while you're sleeping. What's the adequate amount of sleep?
Some people say at least 7 to 8 hours a night. Hard to do.
When's
that,
the last time you got that?
Forever.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Because I just read a study that, you know, a lot of us don't. I probably get six during the week, but then I take naps on the weekend, and they say you can't catch up. But now I just read a study that said you can.
Maybe you can.
I'll just take a nap for the rest of the show.
I'm hoping for me that you can.
It would be better, wouldn't it?
I don't sleep 7 or 8 hours.
Yeah, I know. There's no time to do that.
Do you have any questions for Dr. Gittleman? We will be taking your calls at 312-981-7200. That's coming up in just a little bit. That drove it home, Wendy. Dr. Darren Gittleman is our guest, a neurologist and senior medical director of the Advocate Memory Center at Lutheran General Hospital in Park Ridge, Illinois. This month, June, is Brain and Alzheimer's Awareness Month, and that's what our topic is.
All right. We have some questions. Very quickly, we had talked off the air about this, and I want to get it on the air. I've heard that sometimes if you have Alzheimer's, you cannot remember. Your short-term memory is affected, but you can remember things from 40 years ago. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, there is. That's pretty typical, actually. So the memory areas of the brain that are affected in Alzheimer's, what they're responsible for is making a new memory, helping you make a new memory, not retrieving memories that are well set in the the brain. So when those areas are damaged, you have trouble forming the new memory. You might not be able to remember what you had for breakfast, but you can remember, I had a patient the other day, her wedding from 65 years ago, she remembered the people in it because that is a well-set memory that she had thought of over many, many, many years.
Oh. So sad. Ben has a question. He has called us at 312-981-7200. Ben, Dr. Gittleman in the studio with us.
Good morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is twofold. My wife was diagnosed with early onset 2 years ago, and I understand it's a more aggressive form with an average expected life expectancy of 8.5 years. I wanted to know if that could be corroborated. But also, more importantly, she was adopted, so we had to do genetic testing. Because we didn't have any family history. And sure enough, she inherited the mutation in the APP gene, which is associated with early onset. And we understood that there was a 50-50 chance that she would have passed it on to our three children. And sure enough, they all decided they wanted to know. Two out of the three of them inherited it. And we're told that as a result, there's basically about 100% chance that those two are going to end up having early onset.
So can sorry for all this news, Ben. It's a lot to swallow.
Yeah.
Doctor, and his question was, can you corroborate those statistics?
Yes, so very sorry to hear what your family's been hit with, Ben. So the early onset type can be a little bit more aggressive. Average age after diagnosis in the older population is about 10 years, so a little bit shorter. But also because a person's younger, they're not going to get to the same age as if they got it when they were 80 years old. The APP gene is one of three genes that are involved in genetic forms of Alzheimer's, the other two being called presenilin-1 and presenilin-2. The APP gene's rather unusual. Presenilin-1 is much more common. And yes, what Ben said on the phone, there's about a 50% chance of inheritance, and I guess two of his three family members had inherited it. There is a large network of research sites throughout the U.S. called the Dominantly Inherited Alzheimer's Network, and now they have been involved with clinical trials, so their trials unit. So Advocate is going to be one of those sites within the next couple months and will be the only site in Chicago for research into cures for genetic causes of Alzheimer's disease.
Ben is still on the line. How does he get more information on this? Ben, you're still listening?
Yes.
Just give us a call at our offices. Should I give a number?
Sure. Yeah, please. Give a website, too.
847-720-6464. And our website is through www.advocatehealth.com/memory center.
Good luck to you, Ben. So sorry to hear this news.
Thank you.
Oh, that is so hard.
Very, very heartbreaking.
Cindy is on the line with us as well. Cindy, did you have a question for Dr. Gittleman?
Yes, this actually is another genetic question. And follow along, there's been a lot of discussion about this over the last couple of decades, whether individuals with Down syndrome are 100% likely to develop Alzheimer's at an early age, and then connecting that back to the parentage of individuals with Down syndrome, that person, the mother of a child with Down syndrome, would have a more likely chance, a risk of developing Alzheimer's. And then carrying it one step further, the research, if that's true, the research that goes into that triplication of the chromosome and its connection to Alzheimer's.
So thank you for your question. So it is true that adults with Down syndrome are at increased risk of getting Alzheimer's disease. I don't know that it's 100%, but the risk is increased, and they get it at a younger age than usual, so often in their 40s, for example. The reason is thought to be that the increased number of chromosome 21, the triplication of that chromosome, leads to the production of more amyloid, which is a protein on that chromosome, and the increased amount of amyloid builds up and goes to Alzheimer's disease. There is some research being done. There are a number of centers throughout the country that, just like the Genetic Alzheimer's Disease Network, there is a Downs Network. I don't know the sites off the top of my head. Some of the medicines that are used in older onset Alzheimer's disease are also being tried in Downs.
Cindy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So the takeaway from that is that people who have Down syndrome are now living 10, 15, 20 years longer than
exactly.
they did a generation ago. So they're noticing that as they age, they're getting more Alzheimer's.
They're more likely to get the Alzheimer's.
And this can be a good thing because that means that there is some link between the two, between whatever's going on, you know, genetically when you have Down syndrome and Alzheimer's, right?
Yes, it's one of our ways of potentially understanding the mechanisms of the disease.
Yeah. Yes.
You mentioned medicine, and we wanted to get Joanne's call in very quickly. Joanne, we don't have a lot of time, but you had a question about Alzheimer's medications. Go ahead. Joanne, one more time, and we'll see if we get her. Joanne, are you there? All right. She had a question about meds for her sister that she was taking. There are medications that you mentioned that can help the symptoms, not necessarily getting rid of it.
Exactly. We just don't have medicines to get rid of it now. A lot of drugs are in trial. Unfortunately, we hear about a lot of difficulties with the trials recently.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. Some people have said the first person to be cured may be already be in a clinical trial.
Oh, That would be a
fantastic
nice thing.
So the medicines really are to deal in a mild way with the symptoms, and they help a little bit and have to be monitored closely.
Gives us some hope, and definitely support is very important. It seems to be, not from experience, but tougher on the family than it is the actual person with Alzheimer's. Please watch the biopic, the Glenn Campbell thing. It really explains it, but the family has a tough time dealing with
this. The family really has a tough time, and caregivers really have to think about their own stress. Some people, you know, they devote their lives, but they don't take care of themselves. And if the caregiver gets sick, well, the patient's really at risk then. So caregivers need to think about their mental health, their physical health as well.
Easy to say that, but someone who spends their whole time taking care of a loved one, it's hard to think about yourself.
There are training programs. There are support groups, a church, a religious groups, and so on, family. You know, get that respite if you can.
Yep. That's Dr. Darren Gittleman, neurologist and senior medical director of the Advocate Memory Center at Lutheran General Hospital in Park Ridge, Illinois. Again, advocatehealth.com is where people want to visit, correct?
Exactly.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me this morning.
Absolutely. A quick break, some news, then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.